and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. We are delighted to be back after last week's sudden lockdown, but we have pre-recorded this show as we're unaware what the alert levels may be at this time. But we've got some fantastic guests lined up for an awesome show tonight. And speaking of awesome, let's dive straight in with the super talented Ben and Brody and their latest single, Open Up.
Hey, darling, if the lights went low, should I stay, should I go back home? For a second, I was thinking you changed your mind. But I know, you're not that kind.
Hey, darling, if the lights went low, could you stay? Wrap up to me before the night gets cold. For a second, I was thinking you might not stay. But I know, you're not that kind. Body language, will you come around? Why don't we just open up? You look so good, but you're holding back. And I can't help it if you're feeling just a little insecure. So why don't we just open up?
Why, darling, don't we just talk? No, you're scared, so mine is not your fault. For a second, I was thinking you might not stay. But I know, you're not that kind. And I won't blame it on your body language. Will you come around?
That was the fantastic Ben and Brody, last year's Smoke Free Rock Quest winners. Thanks, Georgia, for sending that through. The music video, Emma, is cool, so we must pop that up on our social media. Really cool video that went with it. Well done, guys.
They are such a fantastic duo, aren't they?
They are, yeah, really young and talented, and they're going to go far as long as they can keep that brother and sister relationship going through it while working together.
That's true. Now, it's been an interesting week for us. We have been, of course, in level 3 lockdown here in Auckland. It was quite a bit of a deflation last week, not our first year, well, over a year now, with no kick-arts on.
Yeah, I mean, we've always had lockdowns but managed to get a recorded show together, but finding out at 9 p.m. on a Saturday night when the lovely Planet FM team are all tucked up in bed, that was just a bit mission impossible, Emma.
It was. So this week, of course, we've taken back to our Zoom studio and we've managed to record an amazing lineup of guests. And should we get started straight away?
Absolutely. And we're now joined by Gavin and Aaron, who are part of the American Refugees Stand-Up Comedy Tour. Hi, team. How are we going?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Hello. How are you?
We are good. Thank you for joining us via Zoom to pre-record this kick-ass show. And I wish our audience could see. They're sitting with a map of New Zealand behind, so they're all ready for their tour. And I guess the first question is, what's it all about? What are you doing?
My bank account, my student loan? Good start.
No, I think part of it is it's really just the opportunity. I mean, we're in such a unique position to be able to do a comedy tour anyway. It's got its bumps in the roads. It's got its level changes that we have to adjust to. But the fact that we can do a comedy tour is massive. We're not helping any particular refugees. It is a joke.
You are the refugees. Yeah, we do get that.
Joke.
Yeah, and welcome.
We're very aware. tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm. So why New Zealand?
I think, first of all, I guess it comes back to like where we both started off from. So Aaron's originally from Texas. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, but I've actually lived in New Zealand for quite a while and grown up here and then left and came back. And I think one of the main reasons is why New Zealand is because, first off, there's so many cool places to see, and we just want an excuse really to get around the whole country, check out new areas. And it is pretty much, I would say, the only country in the world right now where you can feasibly put together a comedy tour, check different things out, and actually have people come to the show and not get sick.
Yeah. For me, I got stuck here, like, legitimately. I got here on March 18th from Malaysia. I've been living out in Asia for the last few years, and we can't leave. So I can pretty much just go back to the U.S. at this point for my options. I think the U.S. passport is less powerful than Uruguay at this point. So, yeah. So you're stuck with me.
Welcome to New Zealand.
Exactly.
Did the two of you know each other prior to this, or was this you got stuck in New Zealand and you met each other?
Yeah, exactly. We met through the comedy scene in Wellington. And so I've been blown away. I mean, I've been doing comedy in Asia for about 3 years now. And it's actually, there's quite a strong scene in Kuala Lumpur and Singapore and a lot of the other capital cities. But I've been really blown away by just the variety and just the amount of comedy that's taking place in Christchurch and Wellington and, of course, Auckland. So it's been great to meet folks, and that's exactly how I ran into Gavin.
Yeah, I think we met actually at a comedy show here in Wellington. So we've been both doing comedy for around about the same time.
Yeah.
I'm coming on like 3 years. You're coming on four now?
Yeah, about there, yeah.
Around about then. And then we met just coming out of lockdown when comedy just started kicking off over at Powwow Room at Medicine Comedy, and we just started chatting. And then, I mean, obviously it's a cool angle. We got so much in common, being American in itself, that just ties so much together. Similar senses of humor.
No one else liked us.
So. No one else liked us. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, to be fair, I don't actually like Aaron that much either.
We make it work.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're stuck in a country, you kind of just got to get on with it, really.
You take what you can get.
yeah, absolutely. So what will audiences expect from one of your performances? If I'm rocking on up to see it, what can I expect?
Yeah, well, I think it just comes back to like speaking about our experiences. I mean, Aaron's one, well, I'll let Aaron speak about his. My one's more focused on my take on what's happening on in the States over there, and then my experience growing up in New Zealand as an American, and just kind of how that shaped my perception, my point of view, how I see things, and just kind of giving it, I think my humor, and Aaron would be able to testify more to this, but it's more like a mixture of like American energy with Kiwi deadpan sense of humor.
That's very accurate. He's kind of a one foot in, one foot out. Mm-hmm. You know, American excellence with a little bit of tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah. I hate myself.
So for me, it's a lot of storytelling. So I like, you know, true stories with some absurdism thrown into it, but a lot. I grew up in Texas, which, you know, kind of led to a lot of just bizarre scenarios, you know, meeting fathers-in-law and having to like castrate calves for like first experiences to gain the hand of my now partner, things like that. Living in Asia, everyone thinking I look like Jim Carrey. That was quite an experience for 3 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then just getting stuck here and going through that whole experience and lockdown in Christchurch and staying at our friend's place, what was supposed to be 2 weeks and became 4 months. So it's been quite a ride, and there's a lot to talk about there.
Had you been to New Zealand prior to this?
Never.
And little did you know, when you came, you wouldn't be leaving. Yeah.
Huge Lord of the Rings fan. So, I mean, I was somewhat familiar with your work.
Now, you're going to be heading to a number of places over New Zealand with your show. Does some of these include small town New Zealand?
Depends on what small is, I guess. But
everything's small to us.
Yeah. But I guess we just wrapped up in Wellington. We've got, well, by the time this airs, we'll have done a show, another show on Friday. We are going to reschedule the North Island just until the levels change, kind of come back down. But on the 22nd. Yeah, we're starting in Nelson. We actually have a camper van sponsored by Juicy. So they gave us a camper van to do the whole South Island, which is amazing.
Nice.
And so we'll be doing Nelson on the 22nd, Blenheim the day after that, Christchurch following day, and then we're going to be in the Dunedin Fringe Festival for three straight days. After that, Queenstown, and then Wanaka. So that's, none of those are teeny tiny, but they're, you know.
No, that's a good mix.
Yeah, I mean, that's something we definitely want to do. I mean, like, I want to go to the small towns. I love it. I want to go to, like, you know, the hotel bars and stuff like that and perform there. That's my, I so want to be there.
Wow. You haven't really experienced New Zealand until you do the Pai Roa Racing Club and perform on a stage that's built on top of barrels. I think it was Emma that we once did many years ago. And the stage moved as you moved. And you just prayed it would last 3 hours of your show. And then stay in the jockey's accommodation outside of the track overnight. That was added to the experience. Yeah,
just a barn. Yeah, sign me up.
Tell us a little bit how you both got into comedy. Why comedy as an art form rather than theater?
Cool. No, great question. I actually started out as a theater major. So I was an actor in college. I did that. I ended up actually going more into the technical side of things. So I was a sound engineer. I loved punk rock. So I did some, you know, Warped Tour shows and worked in a lot of the venues in Austin. I'd always kind of had a feigning interest in it. I'd done an open mic here or there. But when I got to Asia and saw the, like, a lot of the things I was used to doing for, you know, going out, you know, typically in Austin, seeing live music, not quite as popular there. So there was a comedy club by our house called Crack House Comedy Club in Kuala Lumpur. It's fantastic. They've been around for about 6 years. And yeah, I started going. And then the one thing that's amazing about comedy and traveling is you go to a place, you go to sign up for their open mic night, all your friends are already there. You haven't met any, you don't know any of them, but like you're just already on the same wavelength. You're all weirdos and, you know, very open about yourselves if you're doing stand-up comedy. So I've always loved that. And I kind of found my first friends in Asia. In Malaysia doing comedy, and it's just, I got hooked and been doing it ever since.
Mm. Cool.
Yeah, similar story, I think, as well. I think, well, I started off here in Wellington. My buddy and I went to a Raw Meat Monday, which is like the staple of like any new comic coming up, and it was horrible. He was like, listen, Gavin, you can do this. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a go. Just as like a bet. He said, I couldn't do it. I was like, I'll do it. Bet. And then get up on stage, and it went pretty well. Had some fun, and then I did it again. It went pretty well, and then I did it a third time. Awful. Yeah, it was just horrific. I walked off halfway through my set. It was terrible. I went off on the audience, then I had to sit back down in the audience after lambasting them, because it's not like you have a green room in some of these venues. You're actually just sitting with the people who paid to see you after you've just called them out. And then, yeah, I think you get bitten by the bug, and it's something I really enjoy, and I think something that we're both really good at.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're good at it and you like it, you keep honing your craft.
And what's the goals after New Zealand, when you get to escape or get to carry on with what's next, what sort of, I'd like to say 2021, but it might be better to say 2022 at this stage.
Yeah, I think, at least for me, I don't really know what Aaron's plans are. I mean, I'm a dual citizen, so I'm pretty set with the New Zealand, at least for the time being. As far as comedy goes, like I consider myself like an entertainer as well as like a stand-up. So I'm working on like a podcast that I'm doing with the video elements to it, and just trying to do a bunch of other stuff, getting more into writing. So it's a small country, but there's so much, like so many avenues you can really pursue, especially like, as you were saying, going to like the smaller towns around New Zealand. I mean, for me, I could do that for like a whole year. Yeah, that could be so much fun. Hone the craft, get an hour together, and just keep working on things.
Yeah, I'm kind of in a similar situation of just sticking around New Zealand. They just upped the rates for the quarantine hotels, I think $10,000 for a couple. So we're not making that kind of dough on the tour. So yeah, I'm gonna stick around. But my partner's in art school right now, so we're doing that, working through doing this. And so I'm also doing a lot of other things besides comedy. So I'm working with the team on the 48-hour film festival this weekend. So we're working on a project there. I do a lot of sketch writing, just other kind of creative videos. So yeah, I think it's important nowadays. I think the days of just being a four on the floor, diehard stand up road comic are kind of, they were kind of on their way out, you know, pre-COVID. And now it's more important than ever to just be diverse in your content, be constantly creating.
Mm. And just be creative too. I think like, I don't know, for me, a big reason that I'm getting into this is just finding a creative outlet. And wherever I can find that outlet, whether it manifests itself, it's always comedy's the underlying aspect with it, but whether it manifests itself on being on stage, if it comes in video, if it comes in like audio sketch, that's kind of where I just gravitate towards.
Check out his TikTok.
I went
fire, y'all.
I went viral on TikTok, and then Auckland. I roasted Auckland, and then everyone just hated me. And so I had to turn the comments off. I had a bunch of 12-year-olds roasting me. It felt like primary school all over again. It was awful.
Let's tell us, what is your TikTok handle?
Just Gavin Hewitson. Yeah, follow me on TikTok, guys. Please don't. No more mean comments. I got recognized in the street for the first time. It was the weirdest thing. I was just walking down the street, and then there's no funny end to the story. They're just saying my name and then just hiding. It was quite irritating, actually.
So if people do want to find out more about either of you, What are your handles?
For me, yeah, just Instagram, Gavin.Hughes, H-E-W-S. And then I'm on YouTube with my podcast, which is just Gavin Learns. And then I'm on TikTok, because that's where all the 25-year-olds are, which is just Gavin Hewitson.
You can find me pretty much on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, AaronBarber.us. Same on all.
But and if people want to buy tickets to the American Refugee Stand-Up Comedy Tour, where do they head?
AmericanRefugees.co.nz.
Yeah, we know. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then on top of that, too, if you're on Event Finder, you'll come across our shows there. But the big port of call is AmericanRefugees.co.nz.
I'm so pleased you didn't say Z. You're really proud of you.
I'm working on it. He's already, you know, terrorizing all of our cities via his roast. I can't do any more damage. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us. And hopefully you'll make it to the North Island and we might be able to drop in and be roasted.
Yeah, definitely.
Love to see you. Yeah, thanks so much.
Now, we're closing each interview by asking you a very important question. Who are you listening to currently? What's the artist or the song that you're loving? Because we're going to play that out as we go.
Oh, music-wise. Oh, yeah. Man, I can do it right now. Dope Lemon. Big fan of Dope Lemon. Australian band. Australian single guy. And amazing. Huge fan.
Brilliant. We'll pop that on now.
I should have done something like Cardi B.
Watch people cry. forever. She wanted the tide to come up and drag her away, so that when she's dreaming, she could watch the tree line.
Now we're joined by Ravi the Poet, who was meant to join us last Sunday, but with our quick cancellation missed out. And Ravi, I'm guessing this lockdown has mucked up a few of your performance plans, but I'm sure you're busy rescheduling. Welcome to Kick Arts. Tell us a little bit about who Ravi the Poet is.
Oh, kia ora. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. My name is Ravi the Poet. I wasn't always a poet. I used to just be a kid. A Fijian Indian immigrant kid, two Fijian parents, both teachers and stuff, and so education was super important, and I went down that route, you know, like university, tried to be a, I was, you know, did biology, science communication, like all that kind of science stuff. But after I left university at age 25, 2018, I think I kind of realized I was sort of chasing what other people wanted for me more than what I wanted. So I spent the last 2 years sort of internalizing, reflecting on what I really want, and at the moment I'm pretty sure it's to be an artist. And I did my debut show on Tuesday 23rd as part of Auckland Fringe. And that entire experience really reaffirmed to me that, for at least for now, this is definitely what I am happiest doing.
That is so cool. Often we finish interviews by asking people sort of that, you know, what inspired you, etc. And it's nice to hear you're doing what you're passionate about. You mentioned your show, so obviously you've got a show on at the moment. What can audiences expect if we come along?
I do a mixture of spoken word poetry, singer-songwriter with guitar, and rap. And rap's my love, but I realise that it's not everyone's love. And so I use spoken word and guitar and, like, pretty music and stuff to get other people to come along. But really, it's my rapping, and I make meaningful rap. Like, everything I rap it's meaningful. That's how I would describe it, honest and meaningful and thoughtful. But basically, I love words, and that's my, like, true strength and passion, and everything else is to make it sound pretty for you to enjoy.
And where does your inspiration for your words come from?
It's like therapy, you know? And inspiration came from other artists I saw that talked about their problems, which helped me feel less alone. And so I like to think that if I talk honestly and truthfully about what I'm going through, maybe other people might feel less alone.
Cool. Have you got an example of something that you could share with us?
Oh, I'd love to. I've grown a lot, mostly because I started off really immature. And I wrote a poem to my 16-year-old self. It was about 10 years later. I was like 26 when I wrote this, something like that. And to my 16-year-old self called... There's two F words in it. Is that allowed on the show?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, awesome. It's called How to Be a Good Man. How to Be a Good Man. Step one. Understand that you are nothing more than a child pretending. Perplexing, but the journey to manhood is never ending. Every day is a battle between the best things you'll ever be and the bad habits you used to keep. Step two. It's okay to be two for three, meaning let the child out to be loose and free, have fun, play games, see friends, get drunk, that's what humans need, but don't let the child ruin your dreams. Two-thirds man and one part boy. Usually a good rule to keep. I recommend it. Two for three. And up third, don't go chase a bird. And I know it's in our brain since birth. Dick stands up when you raise a skirt, but that's how your heart gets played and hurt. So, Here's an A-plus phrase I heard. I think it's great, and I still say it's worth a mention, so please, your attention. Walk like a god and your goddess will come to you. So don't chase the bird. Look in the mirror and change your worth. Step 4. Respect is precious. Even before you talk, be a man of your word. Don't be dishonest. Banish the thought, trust is hard to earn, and faster to fall. Step 5. We have one shot at life. Why be the type of guy that sits inside and limits his drive when the world already does that for you and tells you that all you need is to be comfortable? Fuck that road. Life begins at the edge of your comfort zone. Listen, I'm incredibly shy. But here I am, trying to write something worth saying in an open mic night, and guess what? I'm finally alive. And so on to my final advice. Please, your attention, give me your time, this could change your life. Show you the light. Grow hope in your soul so you can sail through life, this kid. Open your eyes, so please open your ears. Step 6. Just don't be a dick, okay? Cheers.
Nicely done. We so often, Emma, ask people what they'd tell their 16-year-old self. I don't think in 12 months of doing the show we've ever had anyone turn that into poetry.
No. Basically, that last lesson took me years to learn. But I'm glad I learned it, and let's put it that I've met a lot less dicks since I stopped being one. Yeah.
Nice. Look, I wish our audience could see your face. I mean, obviously we're going out as radio and podcast, but recording this on Zoom, because your whole face lights up when you do this. What is it about performance, poetry, spoken word, rap that just ignites your soul? What do you think it is?
Basically, I'm quite the introvert, I spend 95% of my time alone, and I have my entire life, single child, parents, you know, working hard to, like, provide for family, all that kind of stuff. And so I guess I've always found it difficult to communicate, you know, plus the immigrant background, different from other people. And when I'm on stage, I feel like I can actually communicate what all of me and all I'm feeling honestly and truthfully without the social, like, you know, social barriers around politeness, or, you know, you can't be too deep in this conversation. It's just a water cooler chat, you know, that kind of stuff. And basically that's what... I love the feeling of just being honest in myself and not worried about being, I don't know, just not worried about anything else, I guess.
And have you published any of your work? I mean, apart from performing it at this debut show, is it recorded somewhere, or is it a book for the future?
I've got a YouTube channel, but I'm trying to make it more of a portfolio. And so there's a couple of things I'm proud of. There's a rap song called A Moment of Silence by Ravi the Poet on YouTube, which I'm kind of proud of. Basically, these last 2 years, I've been trying to figure out how to make good art. And so if you go on my YouTube channel, the further back you go, the more beginner it is. So just stick to the last couple of weeks. But I would like to in the future, and I'd like to record an album, all that stuff. And that will all be in the future. But at the moment, I'm trying to figure out how to do shows and do them well.
So what is the plan? Obviously, like you said, you started on Tuesday, you got to Saturday. How many shows have been postponed?
No, so I only had the 2 shows during this Fringe Festival. The first was at Garnet Station, which I managed to do, and there's a little 30-seat venue. And that was I was looking at that as like a warm-up for the big show, which was going to be Saturday at Mangere Arts Centre, which is a 230-seat theatre. And my family got really excited, and my dad was selling tickets to everyone he knew. And, like, he's a really good salesman. I found it really hard to promote myself, obviously, but Dad is so good at it. Basically, that was my chance to sort of show my family, like, what I've been doing. And so I've postponed that. I need to figure out what to do. Now the schedule's changed. The show is going to be in, like, 2 months' time now, unfortunately, because booking with Mangere Arts Centre and stuff. So now I need to figure out what to do in the meantime. Kind of a shame.
But you're moving quite a bit of that online, or we've, you know, started seeing your Facebook page and places like that.
Yeah, that's been the best part about doing Fringe, because before this I was just an open mic artist, and no one told me to apply for Fringe, but I've always wanted to, because my favourite comedians have started at Edinburgh Fringe, and so it was just like I got to follow in their footsteps. And just like having that date and having the people around me and having the just seeing other artists and what they're doing for Fringe has been really cool in just stepping up my game and becoming a bit more professional, such as having a Facebook page and all that stuff. And this is my first radio interview, and so I wouldn't have done this without Fringe, so thanks to you guys on Fringe.
Fantastic. And if you do record any of it down in some form, make sure you share it with us, because we'll play it in the future. Radio show, we'll continue to be your supporters.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I definitely will. And if you guys want to rap on a verse, you can feature.
Oh my goodness, you'll never ever want that from me, ever. Stephen and rapping just doesn't go well. But we'd certainly read one of your poems for you. Do you enjoy music?
Oh yeah. Oh, we can't see, but I came home after university and I convinced my parents to turn the guest bedroom into my little music studio. And I love music, and I've never had music lessons or anything. It's all self-taught, and I love it because it's all fun. Like, I don't practice music, I just play, and I love
it. Nice. Is there a particular musician you're following at the moment? We're closing each interview with a song from our guests' favourite musicians or artists.
My favorite artist of all time was definitely Tom Scott from Homebrew, Avondale Bowling Club. He's in a bunch of different bands, but Tom Scott. And if I could recommend a song, it would be Basketball Court by Homebrew, in which he raps about a basketball court that he used to play on when he was younger, Rosedale Park in Avondale. And he just raps about that basketball court.
Awesome. Well, we'll be playing that now. So thanks, Ravi, for coming on and giving us your time. And do make sure you keep us up to date with what...
Oh, thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. I'm definitely
all the best.
Thank you.
Yeah, this one here goes out to Riversdale Park, Avondale, for all the snot news kids. Check. Basketball court tells my life without no more talk. Footprints still in the floor from where my force walk. Memories still in my thoughts from back and forth. Former chalk still drawn up on the wall for the scoreboard and in the breeze. I hear the old wind kicking leaves as I sit in trees, watching little me sit in threes. I smell the tar seal burning in the summer sun. A mountain bubble gum mixed with burning rubber from my bike's back. Tiger leaving marks on the park. Car park ponds like my name carved in their bark. Blood stains remain like my first tattoo written in the concrete with a piece of bamboo. And I go back now and again to get up out of my head and think about it. Let the hours are spent and I can hear the ball bouncing again. And sometimes I can even hear the sound of the net. Like just walking through the street with nothing on our feet, just snotty little kids playing 5-on-5, sitting in the dark with the bums in the park and the bottle on the bench on a Friday night, chilling with myself, just me and no one else, looking at the world from the 3-point line, from 3 feet tall all the way to 24. It's basketball court, it knows my life. As the days flew, the same hoop was where we came to. Same crew, same old suites, but they were spray blue. Same view, nothing had changed, just the chains new. And the tape played break loose for us to break to. The same room, we like the core, every night like a torch. While the old folk called their kids in from by the porch. You could tell the ones who grew up here, cause they used to get the gear the brothers used to wear like a souvenir. It's like we do a loop. I'm looking at my new recruit, playing on the same hoop where we used to shoot. And now we sit up on the park bench, skipping mass, sipping Jack, where we sat in the days, picking scabs, sitting back in the pitch black as I reminisce on every swish, missing every shot I ever miss. And I remember still, ain't forgotten, probably never will. The day I bet well, 7-0. It's real. On the bar from the rollerblades and the fingerprints left on the blackboard, a black wall and a flat ball. But that's all. It's no more lights, no more fights. So who's like Mike and no games that go all night? It's no more life. I'll pick up a rock and take a jump shot that I once got from that one spot. And I remember how it felt being young as I count 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1. I guess one day we all got it in the game. I never would have made the NBA anyway, but I'll never let my memory fade. And whenever I play, I remember the day just walking through the street with nothing on our feet, just snotty little kids playing 5-on-5, sitting in the dark with the bums in the park and the bottle on the bench on a Friday night, chilling with myself, just me and no one else, looking at the world from the 3-point line, from 3 feet tall all the way to 24. It's basketball court, it knows my life.
Now we're delighted to be joined by Erin, who is, I believe, the one-person show of Coded, which is staging at TAPAC with new dates from the 25th of March. Welcome to Kick Arts, Erin.
Thanks for having me.
Am I correct? It's a one-person show?
It is. It's a solo. Just me.
Just you. No, yeah. No pressure. No pressure. Tell us
no pressure
all about
all.
Yeah. Tell us all about yeah. it. What's it all about?
So Coded is about an AI who has been gendered female, and she kind of wakes up and there's a creator who is played in voiceover. And it's sort of about the AI's journey, discovering humanity, sex and sexuality, gender, and trying to understand and unpack all that stuff. And then kind of in between, there's some more abstract scenes that sort of take off the media and how particularly femininity is represented in the media.
So have you got an external director, or are you doing it all yourself?
Yeah, it's been pretty much me, but I have had a few advisors come on board. So I had Julia Croft come in for one session, which was amazing. And then I had a couple of other advisors, Jess Hong and Aria Dean Baltazar, come in as dramaturgs. And I also had Amber Liberte come in to do some movement direction and just looking at the physicality part of it, which was so amazing to be able to work with those guys. And yeah, it was kind of an interesting experience not working with a director, because I sort of had to film everything and then watch it back. And so it was really great when I got those other people in to give me feedback and got to bounce ideas off them. And yeah, so it's been a kind of non-traditional process.
So coming from the point of view of doing a one-person show, if someone was thinking of doing a one-person show, what would be a recommendation you might make to them?
Yeah, I would probably advise them to have a director or at least somebody to come in as an outside eye, because, yeah, that is really important. And I have found it to be really important. Like, I really appreciated the director's job after kind of not having one there. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, just really go for it, I would say. I think, you know, it's scary, but it's also a joy and a challenge to have to hold the space just yourself.
And can I ask why you chose to sort of look at this topic through the lens of an AI character?
Yeah, I think I was kind of drawn to the AI initially because it provided an opportunity to kind of have a blank slate, like an outside eye who could sort of learn about and comment on humanity. And then as it went on, it also just became an interesting intersection of technology with the media, because she kind of gets access to the internet, and there's sort of questions about, you know, how real is she, and questions about her humanity that I think are kind of interesting to raise and explore. Yeah, I'd say that's mostly what drew me to the AI.
And so tell our listeners, what has been your journey thus far to bring you up to be doing a one-person show in the Auckland Fringe 2021?
Yeah, I've kind of been acting all my life in one way or another, or at least I've been doing classes and been passionate about it all my life. Then a couple of years ago, in 2018, I went to the Actors Program, which was just an amazing experience. That's also where I met Julia Croft. She came in to teach us for a few things, but one of those was creating your own work. And that was like a really big moment for me, where I felt really empowered by the idea of being able to create your own work and being able to express, you know, your own truth, or be able to express whatever you want to express. So I kind of knew that's what I wanted to do coming out of drama school. So then in 2019, I wrote my first play, An Organ of Soft Tissue, which was on at the Basement later that year. And yeah, that was a big learning experience, learning how to write and put on a show and be in the show at the same time. And I had a great team of people around me to help me through that. After that experience, I was really like, yeah, I want to make theatre. And, you know, 2020 happened, I went freelance in 2020, actually. So that was an interesting experience, but actually a good one in the end. And yeah, just towards the end of 2020, I decided, like, I want to make another show, and kind of got the idea of doing something about femininity in the media. And I kind of knew I wanted to do a solo. Just, I mean, it does make it slightly easier in lockdown, at least in the initial stages. It's a bit easier doing a solo because you've just got to think about yourself. That's basically where I'm at today. And then, yeah, I got my close friend who's a producer to come on board, and we applied for Fringe.
While being solo makes it easier during lockdown, I imagine, though, it requires a huge amount of discipline to actually make it happen, rehearse, stay in the zone of it, because you haven't got someone saying, come on guys, it's rehearsal at 7 o'clock, turn up.
Totally. Initially, what was really helpful was the Auckland Scratch Nights. I don't know if you guys have heard about those. Organized by Melody Rachel. In the very early stages, I used those as a deadline to make sort of 15 minutes of something. It was a really great tool because then I got to present it and get immediate feedback from an audience, and kind of start shaping the show from that point. And then, I did just have to be really disciplined with myself and, like, book in rehearsals and then go to the rehearsals. And there were definitely days when I was like, oh, I just want to go home. Just kind of got to push through.
So obviously COVID has had a little bit of an impact on you this time round, because you were meant to be opening. You're meant to be open now?
Or I was meant to be opening tonight.
Wow.
So that's
crazy. Positive part of that, though, an extra week or so of rehearsal?
It's been an interesting experience because, obviously it was a bit scary at first when everything was up in the air. But fortunately, TAPAC have been so supportive in allowing us to postpone and everything. So it is kind of a blessing to have those extra couple of weeks to rehearse. But it's also a bit of a dip in momentum, so
and
processing
Fringe,
through that.
Auckland Fringe, of course, have worked really hard to extend the Fringe season to make sure that as many people as possible can reschedule. So that's been fantastic to hear.
Exactly. That was something, like, I wasn't even too worried initially about whether we'd be able to postpone, because I knew that Fringe had already extended out. So that was a real comfort.
So how can people find out more about you or Coded? Give us a bit of a shameless plug. How do people get tickets?
Great. If you want to find out more about Coded, you can check us out on Facebook or Instagram. So I have a professional page on Facebook. It's Erin O'Flaherty, performer, writer. And on Instagram, it's Erin O'Flaherty, actor. You can also go to the TAPAC website, www.tapac.org, or the Auckland Fringe website to find out more about Coded specifically.
Well, all the best, Erin, for the 25th to the 27th. Make sure you let us know what's happening in the future. Now, we are asking all of our people that we're interviewing this week, what is on the top of your music playlist?
What have I been listening to recently? I have recently been listening to Carly Rae Jepsen, Dedicated Side B. Any song from that is a banger.
Cool. Well, here is Erin's pick, and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
eyes like that, said you could keep them. I don't know how to act or if I should be leaving. I'm running out of time, going out of my mind. I need to tell you something. I'm pregnant.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Yeah!
And welcome now to Kick Arts, the very talented Miren, who is usually one of our Kick Arts reviewers. But this time, we are interviewing you all about your show, Sham, soon to open in Ellerslie. Welcome, Miren.
Hey, thanks. Hi.
So, what is Sham all about?
So, Sham is a New Zealand play. It was written by Jess Sayer, who is currently playing Maeve on Shortland Street. She's a very talented actress, obviously, she's on Shortland Street, but also her writing is brilliant. So this play is a cast of four women, three of whom are over 50, which is unusual for a play to begin with. And it's about this woman named Meryl, and she's living this quiet life with her daughter Fern. But then one evening, there are some unexpected guests, and it turns out to be her long-lost sister and her sister's partner. And Fern has never even known that Meryl had a sister, so she had an aunt or anything like that. So that's kind of a play of, it's a slice of life play about this dinner party. And what comes out of it is a lot of deep, dark secrets and just a lot of kind of family dramas. And it's hilarious, and it's got some really badass female characters in it. There's also kind of, you know, deep and kind of a knife edge moments as well. So it's just kind of got everything. It's really lovely.
Oh, that's sounding good. And you've been lucky. It's hopefully steered clear of the current lockdown, although I imagine you're having a bit of a challenge for these final rehearsals.
Yeah, so we're still we're having to rehearse over Zoom, which isn't ideal because there are a lot of props and all sorts of kind of gags and stuff that need really to be together. So that has certainly been very challenging. But we are still crossing our fingers that we're going to have a full day rehearsal on Sunday, and we'll definitely be ready to go by the 11th.
Who's playing the four people?
Right, so we have four amazing actresses. We've got Anna Beard, who a lot of people know, and she's done a lot of stuff around Auckland. We have Mandy Clark. She is kind of involved in Ellerslie a lot, so anyone who goes to Ellerslie will know her. We've got Stacia Boyce. She's our youngest cast member, and she is starting out. She's brilliant. And we've got Nyrianne Hobson, and she is focused mostly on Howick, I think, but she's joined us in Ellerslie, and four of them are brilliant actresses.
And for you, what's it like being on the other side, directing rather than performing?
Well, for me, I've directed a few things now, but I don't think that's really my main thing. A lot of people can be given a script and direct it and find all the good stuff in it. But for me, I really need to have a massive connection with the play, and just kind of, I have to find that real hook to make it work. So a smaller cast are usually good for me. I love a gritty story, and if it's got some really strong female characters, then I'm usually right in there. So I feel like this is kind of in my wheelhouse, and I'm feeling really good about being able to connect with this play and to do justice to it. And it's really important to me that and I do good justice to it. Yeah, it's a great play.
Who do you think is your key audience or your target audience?
Well, I mean, anyone who's got a family and there's family dramas, I think will connect to it. Obviously, it's being produced by a woman, directed by a woman, written by a woman, cast of women. So, yeah, women, definitely, but that doesn't exclude men. They'll definitely find members of their own family in the play. And also, it's quite a universal story, really. I think everyone's going to connect to it. There is some bad language, so, you know, not children, but anyone kind of over 16, I think, will really enjoy it.
And does it have that real Kiwi feel to it?
It does. Yeah, it definitely does. Two of our actresses are from England, so we've definitely kind of bought into that. We haven't ignored that. But it's definitely a Kiwi play, and we've just kind of adapted it a little bit to the experience of people who maybe had their childhood in England but have come to New Zealand and kind of experienced New Zealand from that aspect.
Nice.
So how can people find out where's the best place for them to tune in to stay in touch with what's happening?
Well, you can definitely hook into their Facebook page, Ellerslie Facebook page, or their website, Ellerslie Theatre Society, or you can just go to iticket.co.nz and just book some tickets and come along and experience it.
And after the show is wrapped, what's next in line for Meryn? What's keeping you out of mischief for the rest of 2021?
I'm working on a solo show. So I wrote a solo show in 2006 originally, and I've toured it around a few places. But I'm kind of aging out a little bit, and so I'm recording it. I'm going to turn it into a short film, and I'm going to perform it one more time. So we're just kind of reworking that, getting the set together, reworking the script, and then I have to learn all the script again, and then I'll put the word out about doing that one more time in Auckland.
Right.
Well, fingers crossed for you, Meryn, that we stay in the levels where we can go ahead on the 11th. That will be amazing for you, and make sure listeners you go and check out Ellerslie Theatre and Sham.
Yeah. And Meryn, we're finishing every interview, because we're pre-recording these in lockdown, by asking you, who is your current artist that you're listening to? Who are you loving at the moment in the music scene? And we will play out this interview with one of their songs.
Yeah, 660 is actually my go-to at the moment.
Let's play this out with some 660, and we look forward to seeing your show in Ellerslie.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
we've got a couple of bulletins to read out today. And if you've got a show coming up or dates that have changed, do email us at kickarts1@gmail.com. But after a disruptive 2020 that saw most of their program cancelled due to COVID-19 restrictions, Bark Musica New Zealand succeeded in ending the year with a thrilling and enthusiastically received performance of Monteverde's Vespers. Now they are back with four exciting town hall concerts and three workshops for 2021, commencing with Bark's grand and triumphant St. Matthew Passion at the Auckland Town Hall on the 11th of April. Their full 2021 concert program can be found at barkmusica.com. Tickets for the town hall show is available at Ticketmaster.
After a disrupted 2020 and a blockbuster Best Foods Christmas Comedy Gala being one of the biggest comedy shows in the world last year, the New Zealand Comedy Trust is delighted to announce the return of the New Zealand International Comedy Festival for 21, running from May the 4th to the 23rd. The festival will kick off with an extravaganza in the form of the Best Foods Comedy Gala, hosted by the legendary Justine Smith at the Kiritakanawa Theatre Artea Centre on Friday the 30th of April in Tamaki Makaurau. And coming to Pokeno this Sunday, on the 2nd of March at the Wellington Opera House, as always, a spectacular selection of Aotearoa's comedy superstars will guarantee big laughs from their bite-sized sets, all packed into a fast-paced live show that will tickle every kind of funny bone. We all need tickling at the moment. If you can't travel to the shows, the kind people at TVNZ are bringing the shows to you through the magic of TV with exclusive behind-the-scenes action from the Auckland Best Foods Comedy Gala. The 2021 New Zealand Comedy Fest is made possible by the excellent folks at Best Foods Mayo, who again have joined the team to keep Aotearoa giggling as the gold sponsor of the festival. So keep posted at comedyfestival.co.nz for the full program, which will be announced and will go on sale on the 18th of March.
Fantastic. Thanks, Emma. And remember, you can email us at kickarts1@gmail.com with your bulletins, or if you'd like to come on our show, we can interview you no matter what part of the country you're in. Now, shall we meet our next guest?
Surely.
Well, welcome into our Zoom studio now, Mark Stevenson, who is author of Jessie and the Monster, and it's subtitled A Battle with Anxiety and a Story of Courage and Hope, and a fantastic illustrated cover, might I start off by saying, Mark. Welcome to the show. Great to have you on. So, Jessie and the Monster, before we sort of delve into the reasons why you wrote this, can I check, is this one of your first books, or are you a well-known author and this is number 237 on the list?
No, it's my first book, and I've basically been writing it for the last 20 years.
Wow.
My daughter was diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. So it's always been swimming around in my head.
So this is a very personal story. So tell our listeners, why put pen to paper on this? What's been the journey in your house that's got you to this point?
Well, Stephen, that's a good question. It wasn't actually, what was the catalyst? I suppose initially was my daughter, Frankie. Don't you just love that name, Frankie?
It's brilliant.
It's so cool.
The proud dad on the call too.
Yeah, but I was a deputy principal in a school, and the school was in a relatively affluent area with highly engaged parents. And there was a girl that came to see me, her parents, and she was so bubbly, vivacious. It was the sort of person that you just loved to be listening to, because she almost had like a musical personality. And then it came out that she was suffering panic attack. Panic attacks, I suppose the level of it can vary, but hers was that she felt like she was dying. Now, and this was often, for example, in maths lessons. And I totally understood when I was doing maths at school, it felt like I was dying as well, because it was so horrible, particularly algebra. But for her, it was a real feeling of that she was dying. You can never tell a person with anxiety, the mask we wear to shelter ourselves, but the huge number of people battling an anxiety disorder. She was the catalyst. I thought, my goodness, look at this lovely girl suffering and having no sense of how she's going to walk her way through this. Boys in particular are concerned too, because they don't really talk about it. They just suffer it. And families struggle with it because of the chaos it causes at home. And you have students that just can't go to school because of that anxiety and the stress that parents feel trying to work through this hidden problem that is beyond their understanding, to the point where a lot of them lose hope, and that ends in some very serious outcomes. With my daughter, she suffered it as young as 3 years old. We sort of recognized that she would pray at night and she would say the same prayer. She would say, "I pray that a dog, a fox, and a robber won't break into their house." And she said it night after night. So it was like an OCD.
Wow.
But we started to notice the huge anxiety when facing new situations in particular. And that escalated as she got older. When she became a teenager, my goodness, it became very challenging for her. It's not a battle of a weak person. In fact, very similar to depression, it's the battle of the courageous, because they have to navigate a whole lot of variables that are unknown to other people. The variables of, like, how do they push themselves into arenas they don't feel comfortable or they feel unsafe in? And how do they communicate it so their parents understand it? And how do they communicate it to a father whose primary focus is to protect his daughter and is frightened because he can't fix his daughter's problem, so it stresses him out, and that stress escalates a problem at home. So it's a very difficult dynamic to move through. And often we find that very helpful people are looking at giving strategies, and that can help in part, or giving medicine, and that can help in part. But a lot of it is understanding the why. Why have I got this? Why have I been cursed with this? And is there hope at the end of the tunnel? And I just want to say, this book, the essence of it is the gold that I've got from the journey that is not strategy-based, but it's coming to a place of acceptance. And at that place, it's where it turns into a story of hope. And I remember my daughter being hospitalized, where it didn't look too good at all. In fact, if I can be honest, the only real thing that worked with me with her is I'd take her for drives at night. I live in Howick, and I'd take her out in Whitford and Clevedon. And I remember one time she said, "Daddy," and she was 16 at the time, "Daddy." And she had this blanket she was wrapped around, and and my daughter's beautiful, and I know that's pretty hard looking at my face to think, well, is she really? She is. She's stunning. She's like a model. And she looks like everything's fine and everything's rosy, because that's her projection. And she was sitting in the back, "Daddy, Daddy." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Daddy, I don't think I can carry on much longer." And to hear that, you think would be the worst thing in the world. Well, it's not really. It's actually quite bittersweet, because at least she's talking about it.
Absolutely.
And we had to have her hospitalized. And do you know what? If you switch 4 years later, there she is in the back of our library at our school. I'm presenting a big talk on anxiety. We've got a whole lot of parents listening to two clinical psychologists talking about anxiety, the tidiness of it all. And then Frankie says, "Dad, do you want me to get up and talk?" And I said, "Yeah, go for it." And she gets up the front. And all these parents, and then she gets up the front. She goes like this, "Listen." And there was a whole mantle of authority she had. And she talked about the chaos, the screaming and the yelling, how we had to close our windows because the neighbors would hear us screaming, because it was just chaotic. You would not believe the number of parents that were leaning and nodding.
Yeah.
It's because that's their understanding, that it's chaotic. And here she was talking about and giving them hope that there was light at the end of the tunnel, and how she found it. And it was then that I was actually thankful that she went through this, because she's now a teacher. I never thought that would happen.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, you know, she's had such a journey. How is she using that journey for good? And you've just answered it with a great answer, a teacher. Fabulous.
Yeah. And so this is an authentic journey, this book, but it's created in a fictional way so that it doesn't threaten people. The minute you put a story and you make it out there rather than about them, they can identify with things in it. And it's a story of two worlds. One is safe and the other is this demonic monster type place. And this monster called Whisper comes into her world and the chaos begins. And in the book, it brings itself to a place where things aren't solved, but things are reconciled with her, that she finds the gold in actually what happens. And that is the story, the absolute, that can happen with every single person with an anxiety disorder. And the other thing is, at the back is a whole series of questions. And I always wanted this. Well, how can I personally help? This book is the task of reading it and then pulling out the gold and then saying, here are the questions. What does this mean to you? What does this mean to you? Because every person's journey is not formulaic. Every person's journey is different. They've got to identify their voice in their struggle and then align it to what the story tells them about what their hope is, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And what age, I mean, is this sort of the primary intermediate age you're imagining picking this up, or any age of child? I mean, I kind of read through and read it as an adult, and it still works.
It totally does. To be honest, with the editor of the book and the publisher, I had a mind of, I actually did the artwork originally, but I got fired because they didn't like it. And actually that was a good sign because they weren't going to sign me up until they saw the quality in it, and they worked with me on how to re-edit it. But they wanted a different author, a different artist. If I was to do it again too, I'll do it very dark and very adult style, because the content, it suits anyone, like you say. It suits absolutely anyone, whether you're 5 years old or 95. The animations lend themselves in a way that's light. So it's pitched at more the 9 to 15 year level. But if I did it again, I also make it really dark, you know, that dark, morbid. You know, if you ever used to read those comics that were like, the graphics were really in your face and it was almost like brutal. I love that style. And then you slowly weave in this light. That's how I'd do it.
No.
Yeah.
And the illustrations are beautiful. So, you know, full credit to Deborah. It's an amazing job. What's next for you in this journey? Is this, you know, the start of something? Are you going to create some more books? Do we take Jesse on some other adventures?
Well,
in life issues that can be solved or talked about?
Yeah, there's another one. Now, this is the next book, probably. And hold on to your hats for this one. This one is called The Monster Within. And I am a recovering narcissist. I've been diagnosed. I don't know if you know anything about narcissism, but it's an equally bad disease. And for this case, you don't just have an internal suffering, you cause others to suffer. So there are particular things that have been embedded in my nature for a long time that I never knew about. A narcissist never knows they're a narcissist. But I had a person who was a counsellor who held up a mirror and said, this is who you are. And it resonated with me that I have very strong traits of manipulation and control. And so my wife and I had to work on that. So it's about a book. I'm still shaping it about how, because often think when you read things about narcissism, it's very much, and rightly so, it's talking about the toxic nature of a narcissist. The narcissist is the bad person. Well, that's true, but they're also a victim themselves because they don't know what they're doing. So it's bringing light to that holistic sense of for the victim and for the perpetrator. Yeah, so that's going to be interesting seeing how that, and I'm really looking forward to doing the graphics on that one.
Wow. Definitely journey, and it just shows the nature of art as a therapy and writing as a therapy, doesn't it?
It does. It does indeed. And you know what? The biggest therapy I ever had was learning to write and write to find out who I was because of the complexities that were in me. And writing was a therapeutic process. You did right, Emma.
Well, thank you so much for coming and being so open about what you're about. And we look forward to having you back in however long it takes for this to come around.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, okay. Mark. And you can grab Jesse and the Monster where all good books are sold.
Now, we were meant to, before we hang up though, Stephen,
yes,
ask that question. So, Mark, we are asking our people that we're interviewing this week, what is at the top of their playlist so that we've got a song to play out? What are you listening to at the moment, Mark?
Oh, my goodness. Do you know what I'm really into? I'm really into this. I don't know if you've ever heard of this band called Depeche Mode.
No.
You are so missing out. This guy's, and the lead singer, is a rock star. And like a lot of bands, they started back in the 1980s. So you're probably born in the 2000s. But 1980s was the era of the greatest music on planet Earth. The worst music videos, the best music, though. Depeche Mode, you have to listen to it. And this guy, he is a performer. And he is... electric. You've got to put some Depeche Mode on. And
That's our challenge. We're going to play out now, and hopefully by the time this goes to air, we've found some Depeche Mode.
Yeah, become fans. Okay.
That is Mark's favourite. Definitely a great piece of music. And thanks again to Mark for a superb interview. We really appreciated your warmth and honesty. There were times during the interview where Stephen and I were silent and just really didn't know what to say, given the topic and the feeling as parents that we both got as Mark spoke about his journey through the chaos. Can't wait for the next book, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. Now for something a little bit different, this time finding out about where Kiwi kids can read Kiwi books.
And now we're joined by Kate Gordon, who is looking after something called Kiwi Kids Read Kiwi Books. And I know nothing about this, Kate, so you're going to have to fill us in. What are you up to? And you're beaming all the way from the beautiful Wanaka.
I am. And thanks very much for inviting me on the show, Emma and Stephen. So Kiwi Kids Read Kiwi Books is essentially an online bookstore devoted to books by New Zealand authors for kids and teens, 0 to 15 years. A brainchild of mine when I published my first book in 2019, wondering how I was going to reach New Zealand, the New Zealand audience, and it all sort of came together in a big galloping rush last year, and now we're up to nearly 30 authors and over 100 books, so that's pretty exciting.
So people go online, see a book on your site that they like,
yes,
and they order it through you and you send it out to them?
Actually, the author sends it out to them, so I'm kind of a sales channel, an online catalogue of books. And the reason I'm doing it this way is that nearly all of the authors who have got involved so far, they're already set up to sell their own books. And it means I can, a much larger percentage of the sale of each book goes directly to the author. So, I think that works in everybody's favour, really. We're supporting more New Zealand creatives, which is cool.
And it saves you having a garage full of books that may not, who knows how long it will take to sell them.
Well, this is true. Yeah, I don't want to be a warehouse. I like doing the marketing and connecting with people and creating that sort of community around New Zealand books.
Mm. So if you were to name drop a few of those authors, 30 authors you've got, who are we talking about? What kind of authors have we got?
So we've got Donna Blaber from Whangarei, and she has a sort of range of small children's books through to she's released her first contemporary 8 to 12-year-old book this year, which is getting a lot of rave reviews. Deborah Hind, who's a well-known illustrator, been around for a long time. and through Deborah, we've got Carl Newburn involved with one of their joined books, and James Russell, who sells the Dragon Defenders series, has literally just joined the site this week. So
that's fantastic. And I happen to teach James's son, so I can tell you that they're a great, fantastic family. And I love that your website has Ben Spies on it, a nice young author as well. So you're covering a good spectrum. And earlier in the show, we talked to Mark Stevenson's about his book, Jesse and the Monster, which is illustrated by Deborah Hind.
Ah.
So lots of good Kiwi connections, and I guess that's what you're all about.
Absolutely, yeah. It's I think, you know, when I grew up, certainly, because it's sort of like 40 years ago, reading stories, the New Zealand authors perhaps weren't so prominent, and our libraries would have been filled with primarily English stories. And so if I had been a child now, I'd be able to read the stories of my own country and things that I'm familiar with. I feel just, you know, a great thing to be able to offer our children nowadays.
So how can authors get involved?
Basically go to the website and find the email address. So it's just kiwikidsreadkiwibooks.nz, and there's a contact us page there, and I'll send them out some information for authors about how our system works and whether it suits their business model. It doesn't suit everybody, but then that's fine. And then if they're interested in submitting their book, we do put it to an independent selection panel to just, you know, look through the marketability and the quality of the books.
Fantastic. And you said yourself that you're a writer yourself. So
yes.
Have your books on the website?
I have only one at this point. I'm still stuck writing the second one. but yes, I have a fantasy story, a unicorn set in New Zealand for 8 to 12-year-olds. And I'm busy writing the second one in that series at the present time.
Gosh, that looked like quite a big book for an 8-year-old.
Yes, 230 pages. Yeah, it's a pretty solid book. I've had a really keen 9-year-old reviewed it for me, though, so it is doable.
We need that at the moment in lockdown. That'll keep a young child busy for days, which is great. And any time that you want any of your books reviewed, we can look after that here at Kick Arts. And I must say, looking at your website, it's broken down really nice. So for a parent coming on, I can find books that suit my child's age. I can meet all the authors on there. There's reviews, there's information. It's a really nice website. Well done.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that feedback. Team effort, a few local Wanaka people helped me put it together. So it's been great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us what this is all about. And I think it's a fantastic way for our parents and young people to find out what is available. And like you said, I was trying to think of any books I read growing up. And the only one I could think of was Meg. And I'm just trying to remember the writer of Meg. It was the one swimming, the girl that swam, who was in New Zealand. That was in New Zealand. Was it Tessa Duda?
Well, Tessa Duda certainly wrote some swimming stories,
But you know, I know what you mean. It would be really nice to see more New Zealand-based things being more visible.
Yeah, I mean, they're not all stories that are set in New Zealand necessarily, but there are plenty that are. So there's a good variety. And I guess it's also to showcase the talent that we have in New Zealand. We have, but you know, as you know, in the arts sector, we have an amazing array of people, and they turn their hands to incredibly diverse stories from fantasy to real life and everything in between. And it's, we've got some teen authors as well, 14-year-old and a 17-year-old, both from Lower North Island, so... showing all sorts of creativity. It's cool.
And on the show on the 21st of March, we are interviewing the winners of the New Zealand Book Awards, which will hopefully be announced by then, unless COVID's moved the date. But that's our plan at this stage. So we look forward to having them on the show as well.
Yes, fantastic. More creativity.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Kate, for your time. We are asking the people we're interviewing this week about their music choices, because we're playing out after the interviews. So what's at the top of your music playlist at the moment? Or if you could put a song to your life, what would it be?
I'm a musical person, but I can never think of anything. I'm sorry.
A favourite song, just one that you love to play.
Yeah, well, I like anything by Tom Petty, but not really New Zealand. Yeah.
That's okay. Tom Petty it is. We'll tune you out with some Tom Petty.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
No worries, Kate. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
She's a good girl. Loves her mom. Loves Jesus. In America, too. She's a good girl. Crazy about Elvis, loves horses, and her boyfriend too. And it's a long day, living in Reseda. There's a freeway running through the yard, and I'm a bad boy. Don't even miss her. I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart. Shadows in the good.
Stephen, that was a fantastic show coming live to you from our Zoom studios, which aka our home.
Absolutely. And what a wide variety we had tonight. I was really touched by some of the stories that our guests opened up with.
Definitely. And the choice of music was far-fetched tonight. It was reaching those boundaries. So it was a great show. Our fingers are crossed. By the time we go to air tonight, being Sunday, we might be in a different level. So hopefully we're back in person next week. But if we're not, of course, we'll be here from our Zoom studios.
Absolutely. And if you want to get in touch, send us a message at kickarts1@gmail.com. Otherwise, have a great week and make sure you
kick some ass.